Welcome to the podcast. My name is Danny Cola. If this is your first time listening, make sure to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so that you can join me in having some epic conversations that access higher levels of potential with creatives and professionals from all around the globe. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Today's guest is Harbert Egberts. He's also known on Instagram as The Flowing Dutchman. Harbert is a steel mace coach. He also teaches steel clubs. He has several steel club and steel mace courses on his website and his company called Dutch Flow Academy. I had Harbert here in Chicago at the Underground Fitness Studio teaching an all-day mace flow workshop, and it was amazing learning a little bit about Harbert's philosophy and teaching styles when it comes to teaching mace flow. Over the course of the last 4 years, it's been longer than that, it's been more like 6 years, I've learned so many different styles of mace from different coaches, and I've embodied it into my personal practice and have been teaching hundreds of clients now the last few years here at the Underground and several hundred online. And it was just awesome getting to know Harbert and chatting with him in person and getting him to teach some of his mace philosophies here in Chicago. This guy's been traveling for the last 25 days, starting in New Jersey, then moving to Toronto, Miami, Nashville, here in Chicago, moving over to Los Angeles with Mark Wildman, doing a workshop there, and then flying over to China, Indonesia, Australia. So this man is doing God's work, traveling around, teaching people the mace and how beneficial it actually is. So this conversation was done the day before the mace workshop. We got to do it in person, and I don't typically have the luxury of podcasting with people in person that much, so it was really cool to connect with Harbert and to learn a little bit about his approach and philosophy when it comes to mace and living life and all that. So without further ado, here's the podcast with the Flowing Dutchman.
Harbert Egberts, Flowing Dutchman. You've been doing a lot of traveling.
I've been doing a lot of traveling.
Yeah, dude. So, like, my first question, and I think a lot of people want to know this too, is like, you're out there going to India, you are coming to the States, you've done this regularly the last 4 years. What makes you so inclined to want to travel and see the world?
That's a good question.
Boom. Start out with a banger.
I recently had somebody explain it in an interesting way, is that I moved a lot when I was a child. Mm. So my father is a priest, or a pastor, not like a Catholic priest, but
he's allowed to get married.
He's allowed to get married, obviously. Yes. So a pastor. And because of his work, he needs to shift, you know, communities. So we traveled quite a bit when I was younger, which wasn't necessarily something I enjoyed, but it was definitely something I went through. And I had this conversation with somebody who had the same, and interestingly enough, also traveled a lot. So it might have been that I'm kind of used to shifting in that way, yeah, because of the things that I've had in my past. But still, it's not necessarily a comfortable thing for me. I'm quite habituous. I'm quite fixated on my routines and habits.
Yeah.
So every time I travel, there's like this, it gets smaller, but there's definitely some anxiety around it. Letting things go, arranging things, like it's definitely not something that I wanna directly necessarily do. But it's a vision that comes into my head, and then I know I have to do it. So I'm kind of, I'm giving myself over to it. And as I've done it more, I realize that once I'm actually in the plane, once I actually sit and have my bag, I feel that sense of freedom and the fact that
the world is in front of you,
and then you kind of shift towards a travel mindset.
Yeah.
So I also get why people stay in that, because coming out of it is also not easy.
It's not,
because you have to get back into routines, you have to get back into structure.
Yeah. So me and Mark Wildman talked about this, and it really made me think a lot. But when it comes to going across the world to do a workshop or an event or something like that, you are taking a hero's journey within your life, you know, and you're going to seeking out new knowledge, you're figuring out how to get there, you're meeting the people along the way. And that's something really important when it comes to overall human development. Even though it is hard to come back to your routine, there is so much that you can take from your trip, all the people that you met, all the things that you've done and all the things that you learned, you come back to whatever your default is and it adds so much extra sauce to the mix. You know what I mean? You're able to integrate some of the new things that you learned on your little journey and help the people at in your local tribe. So what's like the longest you've been in a steady place? Like how long are you living in Netherlands now?
I have been living in the same apartment for, I think it's been 9 or 8 years.
Nine or eight years. Yeah. And then how many of those years have you been like doing this travel, going to India, going to different gyms, seeking out different ways of learning and trying to teach and, you know, new people and challenging yourself in those ways? Like how long out of the 9 years have you been doing the travel stuff?
The travel has been a part of it. When I was, I guess, 23, I was 22, maybe even 21.
So like 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, that was
right when you bought your house or got into your house.
Yeah, that was about the time that went through a big shift and I decided to go on a solo journey to Thailand and Laos. As a no plan, no idea what I'm gonna do, no idea who I'm gonna meet. Kind of adventure, so I saw that as a hero's journey.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized that travel is really important, and I also realized that there's a few things that I find important when I travel, and I definitely didn't like vacation, but I did like travel.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like I agree with that.
There was this long... Like when you go to Thailand, there were all these cities where everybody was touching and you kind of met everybody in the same city again. And I was like, yeah, all this, you know, all other European people drinking at the bar. And I'm like, I'm not really in a different country, am I? It's like we're going to an attraction park and we're visiting this roller coaster and then it's time for the next roller coaster. And there we go again. And then the next roller coaster.
So you gotta mingle with the locals. You gotta find where those spots are.
I met a very cool guy and we rented a scooter for 6 days and went to the north of Thailand and we just went through impossibly the crossroads that were impossible to cross, roads that were only for dirt bikes, and we went on the scooter and we thought, oh, this is going to take us 2 hours, and it took us 12 hours, so we had to actually sleep with locals that couldn't speak English. They actually had to get their daughter, she had to come for 3 hours to just bring a book with like these English words, so we had to kind of tap the images to see and translate what we wanted, like food or sleep. Like it was an experience that I was I felt naturally that I gravitated towards it naturally, but it was also something that really inspired me, and that has definitely been the start of how I've traveled, and especially in India, because those were all solo journeys.
Yeah, just figure out how to get there, man. That's got to be humbling, you know. You learn so much. Do you think that going on a hero's journey, and in this regard we're talking about traveling and seeing the world and all that stuff, but like a personal hero's journey, having a purpose in life, do you think that's important to overall health and longevity?
You have to have it. You see it with older people. The moment they stop having a purpose, a real thing, they
deteriorate.
They deteriorate. You see it physically, but mentally it starts mentally, and then it like it's a result, and as a result it appears physically as well, and then it's gone. So I do think that is part of our human needs to have a reason to get up and a reason to grow, because that's kind of what we like outside of the conscious aspect of it. That's kind of what we do unconsciously ever since we're here. We learn language, we learn how to walk, even though we're not thinking that we want to learn that. We do it. We grow our muscles. We grow our bones. It's just what you call we, but it's innate to what we are as humans, to keep evolving and to keep growing into something. And that is, I feel like that is when you're an adult and when you've got your language, you've got your knowledge, you've got your wisdom, then it's your right or your birthright to do something with that in the same
lineage. Yeah. But keep. We also, with all that, have our conditioning. And so much of that conditioning comes from our environment and the things that we consume, you know, and what the narrative we're telling ourselves in our head, and what the people we love and or the people that we love and what they think and what they're talking about, what they care about, it becomes our thing. You know, that's why you have to surround yourself with, you know, you say that they say that you are a product of the top five people you spend most time around, because you're just absorbing everything that they think and say as your own. And then you go out and you use those concepts in the world, and then you get your own feedback. And then over time, you start to make sense of the world, and you might change that attitude and the effort that goes through life. But yeah, so much of it when we get to being an adult is this conditioning, and we forget that we need this evolving piece to the puzzle. We forget that it is important to go on a mission and serve humanity. We're part of a bigger puzzle, and it's a really important piece to long-term mental and emotional health too. When you're striving for something, that's great. And if you're not looking to strive for something, something's gonna find you. And that's gonna be your crisis. You know, Paul Check talks about when you have a dream big enough, you don't need crisis. Crisis won't hit because your dream is so big that that's where you're putting your effort and energy towards. And in my opinion, it's like a focal point for long-term health and wellness. You gotta have some sort of purpose and add value to the bigger puzzle that is life. Mm. You know?
Interesting, you talked about those five people that you have close to you. Mm. I also find that when you travel and you meet so many interesting, spectacular characters and, you know, people around, you get to hang around people, I don't know, in their home or just, you know, you get to get a piece of someone else's life. It's really enriching because you have a vision of like, okay, I like this, I don't like that, I like this, I don't like that, and wow, that inspires me, that doesn't inspire me. And you, I don't know, it just gives me a very sense of wisdom and exposure in a way, which is very, I highly value.
Yeah.
And it's so,
it changes you.
Yeah, but it's so good. It's been on this trip, it's been so good to meet so many people from the industry and that have been active for so long. We've been following each other for such a long time.
It's fun to meet somebody in person.
Oh man, it's so,
I'm always so like amazed at the amount of time I'll meet somebody and I just feel like I've known them forever. Mm-hmm. Like maybe because we've created a relationship through the internet, you know, people want to talk shit and myself included about social media and all the negatives, and they exist, but it also comes with this amazing ability to connect with people in similar avenues than you do, that you do. And it's easier to connect more than ever and collaborate and create new shit, you know, so that's amazing. But I'm always so like amazed that every time I meet someone like you in person, or it's happened so many times, I feel like, oh yeah, we've known each other forever, doing the same kind of work and in just our own unique way.
It's cool,
chemistry.
It's like, the interesting part about the internet, right?
Yeah.
Because in a way, you do see someone and you do feel energy of someone. Mm-hmm. And we integrate that, just like we do that when we meet someone in person.
Yeah.
So you get this, and if both people do that, then it creates some type of a connection. And then if your passion and your vision and your dreams and motivations are the same, then it's like homecoming.
Yeah. Mm. When I was a kid, I used to like, you know, whatever I was doing, find somebody that's doing it the best ever. So like, you know, when I was in a band, I grew up as a teenager, you know, listening to tons of bands, different genres, heavy metal, pop punk, alternative, and I would see some of my favorite bands and emulate the lead singer and do what they do, you know, and it became my own, like I made my own version of it, but I would always model myself after, let's say, a James Hetfield of Metallica or a Derek Whibley from Sum 41. Like those are the top two that come to my head right away. And it's just like, I watched everything they did and every little piece of information that I can get from them, I would figure it out. What guitars do they use? What amps do they use? What voice exercises do they do? How do they prep before shows? How do they write a song list for a concert? You know, how are they writing songs? What strings? I mean, I used to fucking get so deep into it, but like, I would always model myself after some of these. Same thing with soccer and sports. I always find my favorite player. So my next question is, who are some of like your biggest influences, and who like influenced you to be you and what you do? Who inspires you the most? Maybe a set of people.
At this moment or in the past?
I mean, anybody that comes to mind that gave you juice to keep going.
I've had a lot of inspiration from Elliot Hulse. When I was in a shit place. Not sure if you know him.
But no.
He is and was just like one of the first really YouTube celebrities.
Okay.
And he was into strongman, and he started to give advice about life, about relationships, about, you know, everything.
His name does sound kind of familiar. Elliot Hulse?
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard that name before.
And he always talked about being the best version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And that was right at a time where I started to understand that I was actually I was a victim in life in many aspects, victim of my situation, my circumstances. And at that time, when I was in a breakup, and they always hit hard. My breakups always hit hard.
Heartbreak hurts.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I was already on the internet, you know, I was already searching videos, and I just got into that niche and that genre of, you know, what does a man do, you know, when he's emotional and when he doesn't know what to do, and all those things about meditation, training, health, mentally, physically, I just started absorbing everything. So, and that, from that onwards, I just started to listen and read,
absorb information
about physical and health, physical and mental health, I don't know, development, transformation, whatever you want to call it.
And self-development, self-improvement.
I think that was around that time when I started to realize something like that I want to do eventually.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the confidence in that moment where it's like, I don't even have something that I do that actually aspires to that.
Yeah, right.
So it's interesting to talk about it now because I feel like I'm closer to that than I was.
For sure.
Back then. And he got me into Alan Watts. Alan Watts has been a big influence in me, and I've listened to him trying to decondition some of the conditioning that was in my head.
Very philosophical banter.
I'm quite philosophical. I like to...
Me too.
My brain likes to... I was studying business administration and at the university, and at a certain point we got this philosophy class, and immediately I was like, wait a second, people actually think like that? There's actually a course that people think in the same way? Because I always felt like an odd bird, especially around people that are into economics, etc. But finally I got a grasp of that. It was around the same time, so it all kind of accumulated together, and that just inspired and fueled me, and I started to talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
And became just very, very, it became very, very, I couldn't stop talking about it. So everybody around me got a little bit of that, sometimes a bit too much.
Yeah, me too. Definitely guilty of that.
Yep.
But same every here. Friend circle has to have like somebody who talks philosophy or thinks about consciousness and our place in the cosmos and, you know, the grandiose question, where do we come from?
Mm.
You know, what is God? You know, and that to me is something that every person is asking subconsciously and trying to look for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's good for every friend group to have that. I know that I'm the guy who busts my friends' balls about, you know, just bettering yourself all the time. Do more exercise, stop smoking a vape or whatever. And, you know, how do you guys manage stress? Because, you know, I'm 35 and all my friends are that same age. And at this point, we're only getting older and the body starts to diminish in what it can do. And if you're not taking care of that, then dis-ease turns into disease pretty quickly. The next thing you know, I mean, you hear stories all the time. This kid, this person, 42 years old, stage 4 cancer, or had a heart attack, or, you know, partial stroke, or diabetic, or whatever the heck it is, or, you know, depression. Depression is a real thing. These mental disorders are real. And people go through midlife crisis, and a lot of it is all, you know, it's a combination of the mental, the physical, the things that we suppress, the things that we know that we should do that we don't do, facing some of our traumas, like all this stuff. As we get older, it's much, much harder to untangle, you know? And people that think philosophically, people that think about, you know, conscious development, it's good. We need people like that in the world. You know what
Thank
I mean?
Thank you. I do have a place then.
Yeah. Damn right. Damn right.
I guess for me, a very important person was Leo as well, Leo Savage.
Okay.
He I think around a time when I was really into the, like, deepening my passion for the mace, he showed me as a being, like, that there's actually a way to live your life as an instructor of the mace.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, that's been very invaluable. And he's a great teacher, and
he showed me a lot of cool stuff too.
Yeah.
A lot of time with him.
Yeah. That was about
interesting thinker.
Three to 4 years ago when we get really into that, and even came to Amsterdam. We taught one of the certifications there. It was really it was really important. And I have I have people around me, and luckily I just attract, you know, like-minded minds more now than I used to.
Why do you think that is?
It's interesting. I'm not sure, but I felt alone on this trip for a long time. I felt like I was doing it on my own for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nobody around me who did something similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I came from a background that was very student-like. So fraternity, university students. So they all have corporate jobs. Mm-hmm. They're doctors or...
I was going to ask you that. Did you ever have a corporate job?
No.
So you don't know what it's like to have a boss and wear a name tag and tuck your shirt in and be politically correct?
I dipped my toe in it a little bit, and I quickly realized that made me very, 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 very
uncomfortable.
Yeah, uncomfortable, and I also didn't excel at all. It was definitely something that I was at first, you know, uncertain about, because I was like, yeah, what am I going to do? Because all the people around me, they did something different, especially what I'm doing now.
Oh, yeah.
So when I first got into group training, people just teaching group classes, you know, people around me were like, what is your goal with that? Like, how are you going to, I don't know.
How can you make that into a career?
Well, the question's like, of course. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, I had no idea, but I knew that I was following something that I knew that I was part-time doing waiter as a freelancer. I did waiter jobs. And I just realized how different I was, because after work, everybody would do some drinks and then maybe go out. And I would always, you know, go for training, do meditation before I started my job. And I was like, all those things, it's just, I was a weird bird, you know, especially in those communities of students and waitresses and waiters.
Totally.
And bar people, like, I was a weird bird, and I started to enjoy that, being that weird guy talking about, you know, meditation, talking about spirituality and talking about philosophy. And but I kind of waved my humor into it, and
I can totally relate. I was the holistic health teacher at a high school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Talking about meditation and cold baths and fasting and keto cyclical diet, or, you know, macro counting or whatever it is, or, you know, getting sleep, detaching from your phone from time to time. Like, I was, and I didn't fit. In fact, the industry kind of just, like, spit me out. It's like, listen, we don't like your kind around here. You know?
That's sad.
It is very sad, because I'm like, I know I'm good at what I do, and I put a lot of love and passion into teaching, and I love teaching health. I love teaching wellness, optimization, you know? I was always scared to do it in a classroom setting, but then when I got over that hump, it forced me to, like, learn how to develop course material in a classroom setting, doing different types of skills, different, you know, analyzing different types of, articles or different pieces in a book talking about whatever it was, and different concepts. And when we were talking over like a mental health unit, mental emotional health unit, we were talking about the big five psychological characteristic traits. And then we were talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And at the top of it, it says achieving self-mastery, self-actualization, achieving your highest potential. Mm. And I was like sharing this information with the kids. I was just going along in the book, doing the prep work, coming up with the lesson. And then as I was going over the lesson in my head and like writing it on the board and like talking about it 4-6 times a day, I'm like, am I hitting my highest level of potential? What even does that mean? You know? And there goes the journey. And then you start learning about, you know, Eastern philosophy, you learn about meditation, you learn about chakras, you learn about nervous system health and all this stuff. And pretty soon I didn't work out over there at the, being a high school teacher. I just felt like I needed to express myself in my own unique way with nobody else telling me what to do. It's the only way I can achieve highest level of potential. Because if somebody else is looking over your shoulder and there's regulations and red tape, you suppress, you self-censor. Because then something's, you can get in trouble or fired or whatever. Yeah. And here, nobody can tell me what to do. You want to do a podcast at 2 o'clock? Okay, do a podcast. You want to train 20 hours a week? Fine. You want to train 50 hours a week?
Your own freedom.
There's nothing better than that fucking feeling. I'll tell you the truth right there.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah, and like having experienced having a government job, because that's what it was. It was a government job. You know, and then now experiencing this, it's like, wow, freedom is real. And it makes a difference on your health. It makes a difference on your stress levels. It makes a difference on how much fat you carry around. It makes a difference in how you eat. It makes a difference in how you're leaking energy or not leaking energy. It's very interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah, cool, man.
Anyway, you're here in Chicago now. Obviously the best place of your trip.
Obviously. Yeah, we went to...
not to knock any of the other cities, but...
we went downtown yesterday. It was great. It was great.
Yeah.
We saw the Bean. It was a bit stitched up, but we saw it.
The Bean, Millennium Park.
Yeah, yeah,
just,
yeah.
You know, this clean city, beautiful, lit up, beautiful buildings, architecture, the river that runs through the entire city.
It's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
And, we were in the car listening to some Johnny Cash, and sometimes he was talking about Chicago, and I was like, I'm actually in Chicago right now.
Yeah.
So for me, it's sometimes still, the U.S. always had this, we grew up, you know, I think our age group at least, like so many things came from the U.S., the movies.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, being, you know, growing up in Netherlands, did you ever have an inclination to want to come to the United States? Did you ever think about like, I need to go there and make it, or I need to go there and do my thing, or... was that ever
to live here?
Or not maybe not live here, but just to like come visit here. Did you dream about that when you were a kid? Were you what did you hear about the United States in the 90s, early 2000s that made you go, wow, that's awesome, I want to go check out that place?
There was never necessarily a will to live here, but definitely a will to visit, to see the big cars, the motorcycles.
Okay.
The long roads, the beautiful cities, to see New York. Yeah, there was definitely that. And the first time I came here 5 years ago was exactly living that. It was beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Now I'm experiencing that again, and it's amazing.
Every year now. Got to make it a thing every year. Set it up.
Yeah, there was a kind of a hiatus, but that was also a bit forced. But yeah,
the corona. You said that on the last podcast. You're like, yeah, the corona. It was like, dude, the last time we talked on a podcast virtually was April, March 2020. God, I can't believe it was that long ago. Crazy.
Yeah, a lot has happened.
Yeah,
a lot has happened.
But it's cool that you're here in the United States. What are your thoughts about like the food, the transportation, the highway systems, the style of people, some of the energy that you're getting from the Americans? So tell me a little bit about how you're feeling so far about the 22 days.
Traffic is traffic is dangerous. The fact that you can split both on the left and the right side, and that people kind of overtake on the left and the right side, man.
Yeah, you have eyes everywhere.
People just driving on the right side, and then suddenly have to go all the way left to take a. They're the slow people, and they have to go all the way left to go from the highway. It's like, It's dangerous. So.
Hey, yo.
Yep.
Living on the edge. Yeah, I mean, the Europeans the edge, don't. They don't have the best reputation for driving either.
The Europeans, no.
Yeah. I mean, at least Italians.
Yeah. The no, Italians are fucking. No. Oh man, I was in Italy. Italy, man. I was there this year. It's just terrible.
Yeah, you know, no.
It was more terrible. But yeah. If you come to the Netherlands or Germany or whatever, this
is chill.
It's very advanced compared to this.
Oh, how so?
It's just structured. Everybody, you know, there's a rule system. Everybody kind of moves in that way.
Well, you don't think there's a rule system in the United States? You're talking to a former driver ed teacher here, by the way.
I know. There is, but it seems to be more organized.
Loosely enforced, maybe?
It seems to be more organized, and there seem to be less people that are actually driving like maniacs.
Interesting. I haven't been...
It depends on the place. Like, we've been to New Jersey, New York, like in Miami, so we've gone now to a few places. So.
I'll be interested to see what it's like after you've come back from Los Angeles and tell me about the traffic there.
Maybe.
And compare it to Chicago traffic. Because I hear it over there is awful.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Chicago's bad. But we have a lot of construction.
Mm.
And you're here in the winter, which is like the worst, not the worst time to visit, but like you want to come in the summertime.
Okay.
The summertime, Chicago time, or Chicago weather is the best. I mean, the beaches are open on the lake and there's so many like rooftop parties and stuff.
Not that
I go to a ton of them, but I just, you know, it's Chicago. There's always a party. There's always something. There's amazing food, as we've realized.
There is.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so what's up? Everything good?
Yeah, just had to readjust my headphones.
Mm. So the mace is a unique thing, right? Not only are you like the weird like meditation, you know, holistic guy talking philosophy, but now you're swinging a stick.
Mm.
So like, when you get that, how often do you get that kind of reaction when you're out wherever you are swinging and nobody knows what the heck that is?
Yeah, I've had it so many times.
So like,
I take a mace everywhere.
So how do you react? What do you strike up conversation? You talk to people about it?
I show them like, oh, what's that? Oh, what's that? And then just show them, oh, it's a strength exercise or a mobility tool or a training way or martial arts. And they kind of relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
They
always like wondering what it is, and then I kind of show it, and they're like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I really had an aha moment when I did like a little bit of staff fighting with Mark Wildman and G Money Mustache. We were in Italy. They took me through like maybe it was 15 minutes of just basic stuff, and there was so much like even though I've never done staff in my life, there was so much natural ability I had to move based on some of the mace and club work I'd already been doing. And I was like, oh, I get it. This is why this stuff makes sense. It's because now you're putting your body in best position to defend itself and fight if you have to.
That's exactly why the seminar with Mark Wildman is going to be about that
combination. Oh, man.
It's going to be about the mace, the club,
God damn.
The bow staff.
Yeah.
For a long time, because it's going to be two entire days.
Yeah, that's cool as hell. That's going to be awesome. But there's like people that do that, they're going to see so much crossover back and forth between the two. And it's an amazing workout. I mean, you're constantly thinking and moving and, you know, a lot of it has to be instinctive. Like, you can't really think so much. You just don't get hit in the head. You know?
That's it.
Don't get hit in the head. And that definitely keeps you sharp. As we get older, our brain doesn't work as fast. Our body slows down, doesn't recover as fast. Like, learning new shit, putting yourself in situations like that where you have to be on your toes and staying calm in a chaotic setting.
That's what it's about. You know, in India, I've had lati, which is it's one word of saying it, they have different names for it, but they actually fight with bamboo sticks. So it's kind of similar to bow staff. Or it is bow staff, but and yeah, they basically convinced me that, you know, they can cut stones with them. So it's for them, it's one of the most dangerous weapons, because if you can hit somebody on the head with a bamboo, it breaks his skull, splits it up.
Oh yeah.
So it's it was quite, you know, it was quite powerful to witness that and to practice that.
Have you ever like been a fighter or gotten into fights?
I did Krav Maga when I was 16-ish, 2 years.
Cool. We do that here every Saturday, yeah. 11 o'clock. Sergio Macias, solid.
I love that.
Yeah, it's yeah. cool. It's cool. Street defense. I mean, you always got to protect yourself from attackers. Anyway, what about like street fights? Have you ever been into like...
I'm a teddy bear, man.
Yeah. You're a lover.
I might look like a dangerous Viking, but I'd rather hug than fight.
Yeah, I don't fight either. I'm a lover, not a fighter. Haven't been into many fights.
No.
What about, do you like boxing or UFC or anything like that? Do you follow any of the combat sports?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Because the mace is an amazing tool to train, obviously. We're talking about staff fighting, but like for martial arts, I find that a lot of these exercises relate with martial arts performers.
They do. Well, it's the bases. And interestingly enough, these practices stem from an ancient practice, which is the oldest strength training practice in the world.
Yeah.
And it has its origins in martial arts. So strength training is like an abbreviation, a branch from martial arts.
Fighting. Yeah.
Because that's what was important.
That was the thing.
Back in the day.
There was no football, baby. There was no soccer.
You had to be able to defend yourself because
That was the game.
It wasn't just a game. It's like it's your bread and butter. It's like you have to be able to defend your wife because
someone
can steal it from you. Or you have to go into a battlefield. You know, so many people were warriors. You know, it's, or they would pillage an entire village. Like that danger was always there.
That's right.
And it's not there anymore, not in the same way.
No. Nope.
No, we talk about when there's a shooting or something happens, which is very, very dangerous, but it's not that the whole city is being burned down to the ground.
Yeah, or there's a bunch of foreign people coming with guns, coming to attack your land. They wanted land.
Yeah, that's...
You know how valuable Chicago is on this water? It's Lake Michigan, biggest body of fresh water.
I don't know, but...
It's fucking valuable. But if the Vikings or something like that start, you know, people out of nowhere just start coming through, like, we're taking this land.
Yeah, well, that danger is always there. It's still there. The danger is there.
There are people that don't believe that anything like that could ever happen in America. No. There are people out there that don't believe that that'll never happen. Like, not to say that it's gonna happen, but it's, like, to be smart and protective, like... To know that it's a possibility is intelligent.
If you look at the history, it's been more of the norm than not.
That's right.
But
not that I'm a history buff or anything, no. But yeah.
Times are changing, but some things don't.
Do you have a gun?
No.
Do they have guns in the Netherlands?
No.
It's not legal to have a gun?
No.
What are your thoughts about that? Should you be able to have a gun?
I'm very used to nobody having a gun.
Yeah, but if you live in Chicago and there's X amount of shootings that happen on a monthly basis,
yeah,
and it keeps increasing, should you have one? You got a family, kids, wife, house. You're the king. Should you have a gun? I don't know. I don't have one. I never shot a gun, but it's something that I think about now that I have a family. It's like, okay, precaution. You never know. Now, I don't like having anything in my pockets when
if
I go
you
out.
Have, you know, if you have something, then there's the option to use it. If you don't have it, there's not the
there's
option.
There's no option. To use, you got your mace.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have the answer, and I'm like I said, it's more of a debate here than it is in my country. So
that's
I'm not
true.
Really well versed in having an argument for both sides.
No, I'm not trying to get an argument out of you. I'm not. I don't feel hardcore about it, but I do know that if you have a medical card for cannabis here, that you can't get a license to carry a gun. So it's like one or the other, which makes me go interesting. Okay, but you can buy as much alcohol as you want.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's weird. So LA steel mace staff, the people get to really understand like how each relate to the other one. So how long have you been doing staff, or have you not done any of that?
I've done it a few times.
Yeah.
But in India, mostly.
Talk to me about that India trip, the second one.
Second one, which one? because I've been six times.
Oh, you?
So I thought, oh, you must have been seen some videos.
The latest, the latest one.
The latest,
which was
the sixth time.
That was not the that was not that long ago, right?
No, it was in January.
Okay, so the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And how long were you there?
I was there for 2 months. 1 month alone, 1 month with my cameraman.
Okay, so you were there the first month by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I just visited, yeah, like I've got friends there.
Oh, you do?
Places where I can stay. Yeah.
And these are people that you've met the last few times?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just, okay, that's cool.
It's like coming home.
Yeah. Okay.
It's beautiful.
Cool. So six times there, you've created like this little base of people that you can call family and people that you can trust and go to. Sure. Interesting.
Yeah.
And
my cameraman came the second month. And we shot a documentary. So we basically, I had this whole plan. Like I do know my people around. I knew I do know the different states, different practices. I had kind of a vision of what I wanted the documentary to be about.
Yeah.
So we just went on a, like, my travels are hectic in general because I basically don't have a day off. I just filming, traveling. And that's what we did. So in a month we went to, I think we went to like five different states, maybe six, and we got multiple practices on video, asked interviews, questions, and man, that was spectacular.
And was it all on a whim, just doing it as you go,
or did on you have a whim?
Like,
not necessarily.
Did you call people up and adjust schedules and meet people and all that stuff, or?
There was definitely some pre-planning.
Coordination.
Yeah.
Got it.
Because I had to be at a certain place, a certain point.
Was communication difficult?
Yeah. Oh, it's always difficult because if you go to the traditional places, they don't speak any English.
Yeah. So, like, how do you coordinate stuff?
I have to get somebody that knows the places, that knows English, can translate. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Next level.
It's next level, but that's also why I feel like this project that we're working on, it's a ton lot of work.
Well, you have to translate, I'm sure, some stuff and get subtitles and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it, but just the organization. We got 12 terabytes of footage.
Wow.
Yeah, so just organizing that into one thing is not going to be easy.
How long do you plan on having it? 90 minutes or?
Yeah, about 90 minutes, probably maybe a bit longer.
Okay.
But yeah, it's going to take some effort to get there, but you know, I know that there's nobody around who would be able to do a similar thing.
No, it's very unique.
Because nobody has the experience of having gone there for so long.
So what's the core message of the documentary? What are you looking to share with the world?
I'm looking to share, it's a good question. But what I realized when I got to India, I'd seen some videos from Paul Tarasko-Wokowinski there for the first time about these ancient akharas, these ancient gyms, right? And I realized that a lot of these practices had just not gotten any exposure on the web. Because all of the people that perform it and do it, they're usually not the wealthy people in India. They're usually the more poor. Not necessarily that the poor and the wealthy is the distinction to have, but it usually occurs in the smaller villages, very hidden. Like it's all, you cannot really find it. There's not like, they don't boast about it in that way. It's usually in a corner and then it's a back door and then suddenly there's an open space where they train. So it's just all well hidden. And then there's these complexities inside of India with all the caste systems that certain people from caste, they wouldn't be able to come in there. And
castes,
like you have Brahmins and Sudra, like the different ways of religious people, warriors, working people, like untouchables. Like there's different ways that the system is categorized.
Really?
Yeah.
And then there are certain people that can't go into certain things with other people.
Yeah, there's definitely some.
So like segregation.
Yeah, some type of unwritten rules about whether people, can do that or not. There's definitely a lot. There's a lot of pushback against that system, but I'd say in a way we also have that in the way we categorize people around how intelligent you are. We also do that. We give people that
grades and stuff.
Yeah, we give
diplomas.
People, yes, we give people diplomas and
doctorate.
Ability to have a great job. If you're a certain, if you can count and are very good at language, we actually, you know, we encourage that. And people that are kind of chaotic and move a lot, we don't really encourage that in the school system. So
yeah,
we
right.
put them on a different path in life. So in a way, we're still kind of doing a similar thing, but it seems for us it's very different.
Yeah.
For us,
there's
it's
a
almost,
lot of ways.
For us, it's almost unimaginable that we would do that just by the fact that you've been born in a certain family, that mm-hmm. that would register it. But in that way, we've kind of done the opposite, and we said, okay, it depends on, you know, your ability to figure your own life out and see where you land and where you belong. And I'm not trying to defend the system itself, because I know there's a lot of pushback against it and people don't like it, but there's definitely part of that is still active. And you also see it when you come there, it would be difficult for somebody from India to do what I've done, because you have to get into all these, like, I've been to Muslim akharas, to Hindu akharas, and like these things are quite complex, because Hindus and Muslims in India, it's kind of a, you know, they're always talking about each other, and it's not necessarily that you can just enter those places and be very, you can, of course, but there's always people that wouldn't have that inclination. So there's
totally.
Like all these, and that's kind of what the documentary is also about, to show different perspectives, not just the perspective of one place and the practice that they have there, but also show that in another place they have a similar practice, but they have a different name for it. So something that comes from India is not necessarily, it usually comes from a certain state or the northern part or the southern part. So it has these different, like once you start to zoom in, you realize that it's actually broader and much more diverse than you thought. And that's what I've kind of experienced through all these years of traveling there and coming there. So in a way, I'm trying to lay out something like that, where you see the ancient wrestling arts and how the wrestlers used to strengthen for that, and how all these different forms of the strengthening eventually gotten into their own form of training. So it's not just about the gada, or it's not just about, you know, the mutkar or the club. It's also about the other tools that were used for it, and to see how that is still applicable in the modern perspective. We show part of how women are incorporated or are not incorporated in those practices. So it's going to be quite interesting. It's not just geeking out on one particular thing because I'm interested in that. It's going to be about the culture of physical strength training in India.
What called you to go to India specifically? Where did you get that inspiration from?
I was going on a holiday with my girlfriend for 3 months, and 1 month we went to Nepal. She really wanted to go. We went all to the Himalayas and did that. I looked at the map and I saw, hey, India is pretty close to Nepal. And I had seen some videos from Paul, which made me kind of spark the interest in India in the first place. So that's when I realized that I wanted to go to India. And she was like, sure, let's go to India for 2 months. And I really wanted to drive a motorcycle. So we bought a motorcycle.
Sweet.
Which had a lot of issues, a lot of problems. We went from north to south. Bike broke down 4 or 5 times. But we paid so much for to try to save that thing that I was like, no, I'm going to just keep it. Maybe I come back. But because we met some interesting people along the way. So that's what happened. And in that time, I visited a few places, but I didn't have a YouTube channel yet. I posted some things on Instagram.
2 months there. So when you say you go on vacation for 3 months, like, that's unheard of.
Well, it was a trip, but it was not like a business trip.
Yeah.
So it was travel. It was not just vacation.
Yeah.
But the goal was not necessarily to visit those places. I just heard about them. I knew they were there. I already swung maces and taught with that already. So I did see a few of those places. But, you know, she wasn't that interested in it, and you know, we had other plans. We wanted to see some touristic sites as well. And in the rest of my trips, I didn't do that. I didn't do any touristic things anymore. I just went full out trying to get to all the places, videotape it, get it covered. And that eventually led to something going viral and interest starting to grow.
So what kind of role did you play with some of the wrestlers? Did you show them some movement and, I don't know, some protocols, some cueing with the mace or whatever the specific tools that they had there? Or were you just there trying to participate? And
yeah, participate.
You were participating with them?
Yeah, I tried to do, you know, I tried to learn and listen what they do. No, I'm not. Like, I took my mace with me, but it was also a bit rebellious because there was always this thing about, you know, flow and traditional, and I was like, what is that? You know, what is the, why is there always something going on with how you should swing a mace? So I just took my mace with me and did flows in the traditional karas, which was kind of interesting to me.
Cool.
Because it kind of, but for people there, they didn't recognize it as a tool. So they just, when we said, oh, it's like a mudgar, it's like a kada, and then they swung it and they just said, oh, it's a light one, it's a light one, it's a light one. Because they're used to much heavier ones.
Mm.
But no, I didn't. Sometimes I did teach them a bit if they wanted to know, but usually their English isn't that.
So every day you were going to these gyms and learning?
Yeah, or I was traveling on a motorcycle.
What would you say like your newest skill that you developed doing some of these practices? Like, what were some of the things that really challenged you and were really fun? Like, what is the premise of some of their matches? Like, how do you win?
In wrestling, you mean, or in the practices?
And whatever it is that they do, is it just straight up wrestling matches?
Well, I went to so many places. Like, I did martial arts in many forms. Wrestling is also part of martial arts.
Yeah, yeah.
I did all the.
Okay, so you did a lot of different martial arts.
And the club training. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of forms.
Did you have any issues with like body pains or getting injured at all or anything like that?
No.
Nice.
No, I'd say I can still, I'm pretty good with or at least not getting injured so far.
Do you
but
feel
I,
like
but I do take my risks sometimes.
Okay.
But only when it really matters. For example, going for that really heavy kata or for that swinging that nail jewelry, you know, those clubs with the nails on them.
Mm.
There's definitely a risk, but yeah. You know.
Or a mace that's on fire. Did you ever swing a mace that's on fire?
I did once, I think.
But that's, I guess just
that's,
too
less, that's less risky than nails.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
It would touch you and it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The needles is.
Yeah, especially in India, because if there would be. They're definitely rusty. So, I definitely take my risk, but also, no, I haven't gotten injured.
Do you have like a particular warm up routine that you did before you started?
I have my. Yeah, I usually do something in the morning.
But when you get to the gym, do you do like any sort of like dynamic routine, a little mobility?
Sure.
Yeah.
Depending on what I'm gonna do.
Got it. Yeah.
Gotta open up the joints and make sure everything is lubricated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was like eating out there? I know we talked a little bit about it the other night, but like, what was some of your favorite foods and like, did you like it? Was it different? And did you find something that you can go to? How different was it from what you normally eat? Like, how's that?
Everything is different in India. Food is also different. The first year we've had some good and really bad experiences. Definitely had Delhi Belly and had a few times where Delhi Belly.
What's that?
That's when you eat something and your belly grows and you're like, uh-oh. And you're basically got food poisoning.
Okay. All right. Worms or something.
Yeah, the Delhi Belly. So, and because we went, like, I've always gone pretty deep into, I don't travel the touristic path. So I go, because I'm traveling by motorcycle, and I had a very slow one, so we had to make a lot of stops and at weird places. So the breakfast sometimes was just in a small village where no tourists come ever. And the food then was not that good.
Okay.
So you get fried food, carbs on carbs on carbs, and fried food.
But it's tasty, it's just not good for you.
Tasty, yeah.
Palatable.
Maybe. I know. In the morning, I don't like fried food. So that didn't really hit the spot.
Okay.
No. But
I've like a donuts and a donuts in the morning kind of guy.
No.
No.
We don't eat donuts.
No.
No.
Croissants, chocolate.
No, eggs.
Eggs.
But I usually don't eat in the
morning. I don't eat in the morning either.
No. But
when do you have your first meal? Sorry to interrupt.
11:12.
11:12. And then again at night?
Yeah.
A couple meals a day?
Two.
Keeps the carbs low?
Try to. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, over the years of traveling in India, I've gone to understand what I like. So I know
it's how to find it. It's gotten
easier. I know how to find the places now. And I know when it's quality. I don't eat anything from the street anymore.
Okay.
Because I used to try to live exactly like the people there. And I've learned that with food, you shouldn't really do that in India because, yeah, they use water, the unfiltered water, and the water is just not, your body doesn't like it.
So how did you get around that?
You just buy bottles of
bottle water.
And you go into restaurants where you know that they'll boil it enough.
Shit.
Yeah, well, you have to be precautious about it because otherwise you're just going to be sick all the time.
Yeah.
And if you're there for the first time, you're going to get sick. That's something that you have to realize.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you're going to get sick once because your body has to adapt because the you know...
I guess that makes sense.
The microbe is not used to that kind of...
Yeah.
No. So, yeah, learning how to get enough proteins is definitely a thing.
Yeah, it's a huge adjustment. And then, like, you know, everything that you do in your normal default is off. And then you're sleeping in a new bed.
Trying to
really far away from home. You're trying to figure out the food that you like. You know, did you have a doctor out there? Did you have, like, any sort of connection with any medical professionals?
No.
Nothing.
But trying to stay healthy and fit is definitely a task.
Is there good weed in India? Probably not, right?
I wouldn't say so. I don't smoke so much.
It's probably, like, illegal.
Yeah, it's definitely illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get in trouble? You think you get in trouble, like, really big trouble if you get caught with it?
I wouldn't say so. I guess as a tourist, you probably wouldn't get in too much trouble. Mm. But no, I wouldn't go to the police office and then boast about it.
No, not a good idea.
No.
Interesting. So when you get back home, how do you feel?
Yeah, shift, big shift.
Feel how like much I've time?
Been away for a long, long time.
So, like, how do you recharge? What is it that you do? Do you get back to work, downloading all the footage, starting editing, posting, or do you just be like, shit, I'm home? Wow.
Usually it's the first thing, yeah. Just organizing all the footage, getting back into my home, making sure as quickly as possible that everything is, again, kind of similar to where it was. So I know kind of what the routine is and then get back into it. But it's always difficult. I'm getting better at being kind to myself.
Because
that was definitely a thing. It's a thing for me and I think a thing for a lot of people.
I think so too.
And I can be very harsh on myself.
Yeah.
And
it's a good thing and it's a bad thing.
Especially when I get confronted with the fact that I'm not yet. When you come back, it's very interesting because there was one travel when I went to India when I let go entirely of the whole food thing. Because I've been thinking about food for a long time. A lot of people in the fitness community, they're thinking about food. They're thinking in macros. They're thinking about what mm-hmm. they're eating. So they're thinking how much protein you should get in. Like all these things are, people are doing it unconsciously, but they're always in that mindset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So and when I was there, I just suddenly I realized, no, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to think about protein or whatever. I'm just going to eat when I like to eat. And I'm going to eat as much as I want to. So what happened is that I lost like 6 kilos.
Because you let go of the idea of counting, which was holding all that weight in probably. No, I don't
probably, know. Yeah. And I got lost a lot of muscle mass and all these things like happened. But when I got back, straight away, I started eating exactly how much I was eating before I went. So I overate myself for 2 weeks because I'm not very good at leaving food. But I always made the same, so like before eggs or like just in a similar way. So I realized that the stomach actually had shrunken because I ate differently.
Yeah.
And I ate less. So
yeah.
it was interesting how to shift between those things and also in that way learn about yourself because
yeah.
it's very difficult to have these experiments when you're in your own routine.
Totally.
So travel allows you to shift,
bust out,
see, learn from other people what they're doing and how they're doing it, and then maybe apply that into your life.
So yeah.
Application after I come back and being kind to myself that I'm not yet into a productive flow, that it's okay, that it's all right, that I just gotta see if my friends and family and just ease into it. That's it, just easing into it.
Yeah.
Feeling it and be very open to what happens. Don't force anything. That really helps for me as well.
Yeah.
And what happened last year when I came back from 5 months of traveling, which was the longest I've ever been away, I had just an amazing time. People came to me, they wanted to see me, and I got to meet more like-minded people around me that I'd never met before or not in the same way. So it kind of suddenly was like that. It was like embracing me when I came back. It's very interesting.
Cool.
So it's a blessing, and it has to do with how I'm developing and at the same time how the world is developing, how many people I'm reaching. Like all these things happen in a in a way that makes me really grateful for the path that I'm on.
Love it. It's great, man. Well, this has been an amazing time chatting with you, and I love doing in-person podcasts. It's so much more just personal, you know, rather than Zoom, although those are great and they set the foundation. I'm really grateful to have you here at the gym in Chicago, hanging out with you. You guys are an amazing group of guys, and it's been fun getting to know you and chatting and learning a little bit about what's driving you. And I think the last thing that you said about how you're hard on yourself and you need to be kinder to yourself, that's awesome. It's also a sign of intelligence, you know, like to be hard and to give yourself fine analyzation to make sure that, you know, you're growing constantly. It's a hard thing to manage, a hard thing to balance, but it's a hyper sign of intelligence. And that's why you have the people around you to hold you accountable, pull you back when you've gone too far and all this stuff. And yeah, it's all part of the journey. I can definitely relate, and I think a lot of other people can relate too. And it's okay. It's okay. It's okay to take time off. It's okay to relax a little bit. It's okay to...
It's a difficult thing, but yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. All right, man. Cheers. It's been an hour. Oh, so anything else you want to like leave the people? I don't know when this is going to come out, but you're going to be in LA next.
Yeah.
What about like the next 3 months? What's going on with you?
I'll be traveling for a bit. I'll be traveling. We have workshops coming up in Hong Kong.
Okay.
We're going to China after that. That's kind of the deal. Then Indonesia and Australia. And then I'll be back eventually. So it's a long, long time away.
Okay. So this is right after the LA trip?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. I guess the best way for people to learn, and if you miss some of the things that we've done now, the workshops, etc., I'll be back. But there's a great way to learn online as well. We've got at DutchFlowAcademy.com, we've got multiple courses taking you from A to Z. All the knowledge that I, you know, have and teach is in there for different tools. We have segregations, we have mace flow, we have gada mace, we've got light clubs, heavy clubs, five like series of different courses, and they're all professionally shot. So it's the way to get into some of the things that I've been coaching, that I've been teaching and developing over these years.
Awesome.
So if you want to learn more about that, that is going to be the best way to learn about the tools. And if you just want to, you know, see the journey and the travels, Instagram, The Flowing Dutchman, YouTube, The Flowing Dutchman, is going to be ways where you can see some of the travels and the people that I've met over this time. And that's going to be it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
This is great.
And let's have some fun tomorrow.
Yeah, let's have some fun at the workshop. I'm excited. Thanks, cool. Dude. It's awesome.
Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please share it with a loved one. Follow Harbert on Instagram at The Flowing Dutchman. Check out his business Instagram at Dutch Flow Academy. DutchFlowAcademy.com, where you can find all his courses and workshops with steel clubs, steel mace, just a plethora of knowledge.
It was so fun chatting with him. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Follow my Instagram at Danny Cola Fitness for clips of the podcast and also clips of little workout videos that might enhance your performance and your day-to-day. Follow Danny Cola TV on YouTube for clips of the podcast and more videos when it comes to health and wellness protocols. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful day. All love.